Live. Welcome to In Search of Zen podcast, the fastest rising podcast in all of Canada.
Yes, indeed, sir. AJ Bate
and Jason Allen.
Thank you for joining us on a new Tuesday.
Fun.
Hope you have COVID and we're staying at home, not bothering people.
And we got a very special guest, too.
I mean, this guy.
The most special.
This guy's an inspiration to all the Canadian comics.
I would say so.
He made it out.
He's special to me.
Yeah, he kind of like, the only thing that I will say is that he's giving a lot of shitty comics hope. They're like, I'm going to be on Fallon. No, you're not.
Yeah, no, you're not. He's going to do it again.
He's going to do it again, and you're probably not going to do it. I hope
he's going to keep doing them.
But no, I'm a huge fan of this guy.
Fan. Please give it up. We've been through him for 2 minutes now.
Yeah.
Give it up for Nathan McIntosh. Nathan McIntosh here.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be an inspiration to many.
You are. And this is a legit series. I'm not even joking. You are, man.
He's fanboying right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to make this like professional and like make it like a, you know, a serious podcast, but I'm a huge fan.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much, dude.
No, thank you, man. Thank you. No.
Me, on the other hand, I got a lot of problems I want to hatch out over this podcast, sir.
I'd love to hear them.
No, I'm just joking. No, we got, I was talking to you about it at the Comedy Nest. I was like, I like your stuff so much. I told you I don't agree with your Beatles bit, and it yes. still made me laugh.
Yeah, I've gotten that like 3 or 4 times from people. I mean, people love the Beatles, man. People love the Beatles. The Beatles are fine. Beatles are very okay.
Hey, you don't have to backpedal. By all means, stand by.
What'd no, I'm say? Saying it. That I'm they are okay.
Well, that's the thing. He said they're very okay.
They're very okay.
Nobody's ever said that about the Beatles. Right. So the man is standing his ground.
But I appreciate you, man. That's one of those things that people get pretty angry about, I guess. The Beatles stuff. People hate when you trash the Beatles, but I mean,
people get passionate about it. I once had a girl get mad at me at a party. Because she was like, I don't like the Beatles. And I was like, I don't believe you. I think you're just saying that to seem interesting.
Yeah, people have said that to me as well. And I'm like, do you know how hard that is to do? Do you know how hard that is to just be that person who walks around, waits for other people to say things that they like, and then go, I don't like it?
I guess that's a tough true. Life. That would be a tough
yeah,
life.
Yeah, that's pretty much saying that you only live for that moment.
You guys didn't know this girl, though. She did.
Oh, she did, yeah?
She was the type.
Well, I would like to think that, like, even though I disagree with Nathan, but I like to think that he presented an argument.
No, he did present. You know that's what why I mean? The joke works,
yeah,
right?
Because there was an argument that was presented. He just didn't say it for the
sake of saying it. Yeah, because there's stuff that people will say on stage, and you know it's just going to get clapped.
Yeah, saying the Beatles suck is not one of those things.
It's not one of those things. You are not searching for clapter whatsoever. You have to present your argument.
Can we also say that there are people who say they like the Beatles even though they don't know anything about the Beatles?
That's very true. Yeah, I fit in kind of thing to
you. And you know that if you ask them what their favorite album is, and it's like Sgt. Pepper's, and they're like, I think you just read an article
they know
on
the one
like
album
Rolling
or something.
That,
it's like, hey, your dad listened to it and you heard it in the background.
Yeah, pretty much
or
you like it. Yeah.
Or like, yes. Not really a fan.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I don't. I also don't necessarily love their sound, but that's kind of why I got upset with them years ago, because friends of mine said they just went so over the top. And then when you do meet certain people, they're like, I love the Beatles, and they could just name Hey Jude and something else. You go, like, I believe anybody who really likes them or who was there, like anybody who was lived in the 60s, I believe
sure.
you like the Beatles.
Sure. Yeah.
But today, I don't even really believe when people say they love David Bowie. I'm like, do you?
He's a hard listen.
That's a hard listen,
it's
man.
A
That's
hard
a
listen,
tough...
man.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's so many people that say, oh, I love David Bowie. They know maybe one song. You just like a guy wearing makeup. That's fine. You're allowed to say that, but I mean...
He has multiple personalities, and it's like, grow up. Like, just stick to a name already. Enough. Star Ziggy and
Stardust.
Yeah, just enough already. just grow up.
All right.
Yeah. And there's people that definitely like him for sure, but then other people just say it to say it, and you go, okay, well, this is too much.
Like, I'll even say this, to be honest, not the biggest fan of Prince. I can't get into it.
I can say that. I feel like there's like one or two hits, and then when people died, when he died, people were like, "We lost a god today." I'm like, okay.
I mean, I've tried to listen to Purple Rain. I don't get it. I do not get Purple Rain. I find it
a boring song.
It's a very boring.
Did you
song.
Like the? Did you like the Batman soundtrack?
It's all I.
It's
listen.
Pretty great.
I can't disagree with that. Yeah.
I personally know like it makes sense that people are big fans of Prince, but yeah, anytime somebody dies, people jump on board. But I personally am not a massive fan of Prince. I'm not like against the guy, but I've said this to people and they get mad at me. I've always thought, because you know that people compare Prince and Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Oh, it's not even close, as far as I'm concerned.
Think we might have lost him. Did we lose him?
Fuck.
That's okay.
Rick James is better than Prince, even though he has way less massive hits, way less fame than Prince did. But yeah, that's a small argument that I'm on my own.
I would say the same. No, I would say the same. I do think Rick James is better than Prince.
Yes.
You know who Hot Chocolate is?
Hot Chocolate.
Hot Chocolate.
Wait. The song, fuck, yes, I do. What's that song?
I believe in miracles and everyone's a winner, babe.
Yeah. Good song.
Better than Prince. Better than any Prince hit, as far as I'm concerned. Everyone's a winner, babe.
Everyone's a winner is a great song.
Everyone's a winner is a great song. I believe in miracles is a great song.
It is.
Yeah, you're right. He does have way more catchier tones.
He's got catchier songs.
And Rick James is much more entertaining and more interesting, even his songs.
He's a more interesting person, and his songs are more entertaining.
Yeah, exactly.
Too. Yeah.
And they hated each other. Prince opened for Rick James at one point in time, and then Rick James said that he stole his you know, sort of like his essence.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
But Prince was unbelievably, insanely talented. Like, beyond realms that even make sense. I mean, just craziness.
Insane guitar player, too. Really doesn't get enough credit for his guitar playing. But,
yeah, I think he played everything, right? Like, every instrument he could play, which is crazy.
Yeah. And there's certain musicians like that that don't get their credit either. Like, Beck plays pretty much all of his instruments. On albums,
I don't know
and
anything
stuff.
About Beck.
Oh no!
Yeah, he's a big fan of Beck, and he's really trying to be pushing him on me for so long, and it's like I can't do it.
Come on!
I can't do it.
I know the name Beck, but I couldn't name. And this isn't me bashing Beck. I just don't know Beck. I couldn't name a song, a Beck song. I know no Beck.
You know, Loser is his probably most popular song.
And how does this go?
Oh, come on.
This is going to be horrible.
I'm a loser, baby, Jason singing. Why don't you kill me?
Is that a real lyric?
Yeah.
Sounds more like Creep. Sounds like Radiohead song.
I'm talking into it because you don't want to hear me sing, Nathan. This will not be.
I'm a loser, so you might as well kill me. I'm going to have to listen to this.
I'm a loser, baby. So why don't you kill
pretty
me?
Pretty depressing.
It's really sad.
It's
pathetic.
A song.
It's pathetic.
Oh, don't act like you don't like Beck.
But I don't like, you know, you somebody saying, like, I'm a loser, kill me. Oh, like, wow. Just keep that to yourself.
Wow. Yeah, that's sad. But I don't know any Beck. No, I don't know any Beck.
You like a lot of doc rock and feel good music, though, right?
Doc rock? Like yacht rock?
Yacht, okay. I always say doc
about?
Rock. Yeah.
What do you, I've never heard someone call it doc rock. I like that.
Like yacht rock to you, like Eddie Money?
Sure. Whatever they would play on the Yacht Rock channel on on Sirius.
There's a Yacht Rock channel?
Absolutely. It used
I'm
to be
getting on
formerly
that,
known
sure.
as the Bridge.
Okay.
It graduated to a yacht.
But it's like a lot of like summertime rock and roll, like BTO and stuff like that, right?
Sure. You got your Michael McDonald's on there.
Yeah.
You got your
What a Fool Believes.
Yes, absolutely. You can't even picture hearing that on a yacht.
I can for sure hear that on a yacht.
This music sounds horrible.
You know, suit jacket, no shirt underneath.
Yeah. Michael McDonald. Nobody's going to call themselves a loser and say, kill me on a yacht.
God, no.
No, it's true. You're not listening to Beck on a yacht.
They're doing that to other people.
Yeah, they're killing other people who work for them.
Yeah.
You've been good? You're in this city now. You're in Toronto.
Yeah, I was here to do some shows. So quarantine for a couple weeks. Ended up canceling some shows, well, all shows yesterday because of, because things are kind of going up here and it just doesn't really make any sense.
Right.
I'm fine. I go back to New York on Wednesday for a second and then out to the East Coast. But
Nice. I heard the New Brunswick border just opened up again too. So that's
great. I'll be able to see my mom.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. No, the Maritimes really shut off. I mean, they really, really shut it completely down. But because of that, they got no cases.
They have no cases. No, they were super, super smart about it. Are you going there to do shows or just kind of see your family and your mom and stuff?
Yeah, I'm just going to see, just visit people. I haven't been, I was supposed to be in Canada and back out there in like March, April. But obviously the whole world.
All this happened. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go out there for maybe like a month. And then I honestly might be in Canada until January. Just like being here, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. Why not? Right.
Yeah. There's not going to be any shows really. Like New York hasn't started doing indoor stuff yet.
Right.
So then November, December, there just won't be too much of a reason to be there. I'm gonna avoid the election.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's gonna be crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You did some road work in the States after quarantine.
Yes, I had shows at a club that's in a casino in Connecticut, and they asked me, they were like, hey, if you don't feel comfortable coming, that's cool. And I didn't really, but I also felt bad canceling because I'm like, well, I mean, I don't even know when I'm going to do shows again. Maybe right. I should just do it. I did them and the shows were great, but it was also, you know, you're walking around a casino, everybody has a mask on until they go inside of a restaurant or something, but the restaurants are all in the casino. So
it's still the same thing.
Yeah.
It's still the same thing. Yeah. There's a lot of weird rules to this that like really don't make sense. And it's almost like if you even question them, then people either think that you want things to close, but it's like, no, it's not that, but it's also what's happening right now is kind of crazy and it doesn't make sense. Like, you know, the place is closing. Nothing can be open after 12, which is bizarre. Like, was that any gonna make thing any better?
Yeah, like what do you think about that? The curfew now.
I mean, the curfew is kind of weird.
I mean, you can still get drunk before 12.
100%. And you can still get.
I don't see how it makes a difference.
Yeah, you can get drunk and still hug people and lick faces and everything. Like, doesn't make any difference. But
yeah.
But if you say that, then people think, oh, what, do you want everything to be closed again? I'm like, no, I don't. It's like, it's not either this or that. Like,
you're just calling out this stupid.
Just, well, like, I'm trying to figure out with you guys. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and this place, I mean, it was kind of cool, honestly, because you're sitting at a bar in a place having a drink and there's sports on. And you're like, oh, my God, this feels like the 90s, you know, because New York hasn't had indoor stuff. They just got indoor stuff once I came here, so like middle of September. But before that, it was just patios and that's it.
Yeah.
So, you know, doing shows in the park and that kind of thing. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, curfew at midnight. Okay. Cool.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I guess.
Toronto's curfew is like 1 o'clock anyway, you know, in terms of like the subway stops running at like 1:30.
Yeah.
So it's not really that much of a it's not really that much different.
No, it's not. But if, for some odd reason, I think it's just the government's way to make people feel like, oh, we're doing something.
I think that's part of it, is that they want to look like they're doing something without shutting the economy
down. Yeah, but again, speaking of shows in New York, I heard that there's a venue that was like the thing now in New York. It's like a place where they go up the like stairs, like on rails and whatever, and it's a room. It's called a cupboard or something like that. I can't.
Oh, Tiny Cupboard. Yeah, yes. They have shows on the roof. There's a bunch of rooftop shows in New York. But, yeah that place has a bunch of – it's like just a performance space and an artist space. There's, like, a bunch of lofts in there and stuff where they do shows. But, yeah, when this started happening, they have a tiny little horrific staircase that goes up to the roof. But the roof – I mean, it's amazing. There's, like, 30, 40, 50 people up there. Because awesome. The roof is huge, and it's really just like a regular show. It was great.
That's great.
Like, to do one I could, awesome.
Yeah. And you've been in New York for a while, right? Like, it was like you, Seinfeld, Colin Quinn kind of all moved there around the same time.
1978. I started with Seinfeld, and obviously he's done it much better.
Wow.
In the 42 years.
In the 42 years you've been in stand-up.
You were in Crocodile Dundee with Colin Quinn, and it's been good so far.
Is Colin Quinn in Crocodile Dundee?
Two.
Oh, my God.
He's in two. I didn't know that either, but that's hilarious.
And there was a story of him that where he, because he just had a small role, like he was the guy that was showing Crocodile Dundee around New York, and he wrote like part of a script that, so to give himself a bigger role in it. And the director was like, no.
Oh, he wanted that so funny.
But he just came up to the director and was like, I rewrote some parts of the script to like have more. And he's like, no, you're not. The
director's like, shut up.
It was a famous story.
Stand here.
I did not know that. I didn't know he was in that at all. That's funny. I love the first one. The first Crocodile Dundee is great.
Oh, yeah?
I think so. And I mean, I think it's better than the Beatles. The movie, the first Crocodile Dundee is great. The ending of it is great. That movie's great. I can't speak for any of the other Dundees, but that one.
Am I wrong? Isn't there an airport scene where he's chasing her through the airport?
That the end of the first one is him chasing her through the subway.
Like, no, I think the airport is two. I think the
airport might be two. Yeah.
That's just how they end every movie. Tripping gets on something girl behind him. In some kind of travel location.
Yes. Crocodile Dundee will chase you through whatever mode of transportation you have chosen.
He gets what he wants.
He loves you.
He gets what he wants.
He does.
That's why the movie's so good. But I've been living in New York now for 9 years, which is insanity.
Wow.
And you've been doing stand-up for?
Ugh, I've been doing stand-up for fucking 15 years.
15?
Mm. Yeah, this so September. You moved
pretty early in your career.
You moved kind of early-ish, yeah.
I mean, yeah, yes. I shouldn't have moved when I did. I should have stayed.
Why? That's what I'm getting at, Nathan.
I should have stayed because, well, and not necessarily. It's not that I should have stayed, but... right when I left, I was starting to get a couple things here, and people were like, oh, that guy. So as soon as I moved, people were like, hey, fuck, man, if you have any idea for shows, you should come in and pitch them. And somebody wanted me to audition to be, like, the host of a thing. And I left before really doing certain things here. But what the fuck? Who the fuck? I mean, once the whole world shuts off, you go, what the fuck did any of it really... Who cares?
And really, even just living in New York as long as you have now, and you've obviously like established yourself where you're at the Comedy Cellar, you're known there, you've done late night shows. You have to think, looking back now, like what would have been a year or two in Canada doing Canadian television?
Yeah, I mean, well,
you know what I mean? Like, would it have really made a big difference in your life to do that for a couple years before moving?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. My thought on it kind of was at the time, I'm like, I always wanted to go to New York, and I go, if I don't leave at some point, you just get used to where you're at.
Yeah,
and then exactly. It's too hard to leave, you know? Like, there's a lot of people that move somewhere when they're like 35 or something, and then a year later they leave because they're like, oh, I was doing well where I was. I was making money where I was.
Right,
and
that's right.
A hard thing to move, walk away from.
Yeah. And so I'm sure like if you got your, like, got the roles that you like would have stayed for, it would have been even much harder for you to leave for New York. And I think like for most comics who like, you know, kind of want to, you know, do good things in comedy, I think they all kind of want to move to either New York or LA, but like for the most part, really New York. And to not make that move and stay where you are, I think that's just kind of limiting of what you would be able to do. And I guess your even like potential as a comic too would limit that as well.
Sure. Yeah. And it just gets like harder to do a move like that. Even, you know, I'm sure there's people in fucking Tillsonburg who do stand up and they're like, oh, I'm going to move to Toronto. And then the longer you put off doing that, then right. One day you're just performing at a Krabby Joe's to your fans in Tillsonburg.
Yeah. You're right. The Tillsonburg guy.
You're Tillsonburg guy.
You don't want to be the Tillsonburg guy.
I'll have you know there's more shows in Tillsonburg than Toronto right now, though.
Which
is shocking. Getting the last
like,
laugh.
People, like, there's a
Tillsonburg comedy scene.
There's a comic from Ottawa that said, we're doing fine here. There's a show there every week. I'm like, shitty Ottawa? Like Ottawa? Really?
Yeah, but you live in Ottawa.
You live in Ottawa. Enjoy that for the next three months, you dummy. It's fucking going to go...
Yeah, it'll probably shut down. Like, things will happen.
Ottawa.
And you have nothing wrong with being the person that stays in Tillsonburg. But if you want to move, the longer you don't, just kind of the harder it becomes. We also shouldn't go, like, day one either. Like, I've seen
people move to New York
or L.A. year one. And you can do it, but fuck, man. It's hard. It's just hard. It's hard.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
After years.
Yeah. It was probably hard for you, and you already had, like, credits in Canada, and I'm sure
nobody cares. When I got there, nobody cares. The everybody told me that your first year or two in New York is terrible. Everyone said that, which thank God, because it really is. Like, you know, I was living in a place that had roaches. There was like, I couldn't get on any kind of even open mics, and down there. You got to put your name in a bucket to even be, maybe get on this mic, but the mics aren't, they're not fair. It's like whoever's running it knows some of the people that come in all the time. So they'll just pick those names first. So I was last on a 2.5 hour mic, talking to like three people. I mean, it sucks, but everybody sort of has that story of their first year or two in New York is bad, which did help me out, but. I mean, Toronto kind of sucks too when you first get here. Like,
you'll go down the list for sure when you're first in the city. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
More known. It's any bigger scene, I guess, is like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
Did you work the road a lot in those first couple of years, though? Was it easy to do that at least and kind of keep up some chops? Or did you just try to stay
in
New York and establish yourself?
I went, I did a couple things on the road, but I did like a bunch of shows with Absolute, and it was like five straight weeks.
So you'd come back to Canada and do that run.
Yeah, and I did that one time, and then I went back to New York, and people were like, oh, we thought you left. And I was like, well, never going to do that again. So then I just bled money for long time because I was just like, well, fuck it, I moved here, I have to stay here and try to make this, I have to try to figure this out, I have to try to make this work.
You can't be wishy-washy about it. Like, you can't be like 5 weeks there and 5 weeks here, because it seems like everybody there has like a goldfish memory, right? If you're not in front of their faces all the time, then they'll just think that you quit or went back to Canada probably.
It really is the same in Toronto, because so many people come here from, like, you know, Calgary, let's say somebody's like, oh, I moved here, you know, I'm coming to Toronto for whatever, and then they're like, you know, I'm gonna be here for a couple weeks and then probably come back in 6 months, and you go, okay, cool, well, any single thing that you did here is now gone when you come back, because so many, you have to be here at least 6 months to a year before anybody actually even looks at you as a person who's in Toronto. And New York is like a year to two before they start looking, it was like a New York comedian, because, you know, people are coming from fucking Korea. They'll do three shows and then fade into the mist. So they can't take you, they can't take every single, they can't take every person at face value when they say, oh, I'm in New York. Like, oh, okay, are you? Or are you going to be gone in?
It's like, we'll see about it. We'll see about it.
How long, how, when you started, did you just start popping into the cellar right away to even just, like, obviously not to do spots, I'm not saying
you got him mad again. Leave there.
No, I know he's angry.
What are you talking about?
Of course.
No.
I don't mean popping us into a spot. I mean, like, how often were you hanging out there?
Never.
To figure, never. You just stayed away from it for the first little bit until you got more established?
Yeah. Yeah, I every club, so when I first moved there, I went to every club and introduced myself to the manager, and like sent them a tape. Some people were real rude, other people were pretty nice, but I didn't even go to the cellar at all because that, you know, I was like, well, you can't just walk in there.
It's the place, right? So it's like kind of hard to.
Yeah, and that's the type of thing that, like, I'll say this, comedians that go and hang at the cellar and aren't there get talked about by the comedians that do work there.
Oof. Oh, I see. Okay.
Oof. It's not a fucking Wendy's.
No, I get what you're saying completely, because it's almost like you're kind of like devaluing yourself in a way where you're just hanging out at a place that you're not working at. And then, because then it just looks bad on you. So it's almost better to kind of like, you know, establish yourself, you know, get better.
And then working somewhere.
Yeah. And then, you know, hopefully like you make it into the club where you showcase, and then, you know, you kind of earn the right, or not necessarily earn the right, but it's just more, you know, it's better for you to then be hanging out. Cause like, oh, I'm probably going to do a set later that night or something like that.
Right. Right.
There's other places, like other shows and stuff where you can hang out and it does help you. Like you can get on, you know, but the cellar is not that way. And people, if you just hang out, people go, why the fuck isn't this person doing a show? Why are you just sitting here when there's so many other shows you could be doing?
And I'll start mocking your work ethic. Right.
Yeah, you go, yeah, of course you want to do shows there. If I was in London, I would want to do shows at the fucking Comedy Store. If you're a comedian, yes, it's a place where you do shows. So it's not, you're not showing anybody anything of, oh, look, they want to be here. Of course they fucking want to. Why don't you just go sit on the steps of Madison Square Garden and fucking, maybe somebody will throw you up.
Yeah, exactly.
These two things are not the same, but you get what I'm saying. It's like, just hang out. Yeah.
You're not.
So no, I didn't even go by there. I didn't even.
You just avoided it for a while. Or not avoided.
I was in there one time before I got past there. And I would do other clubs in the area. And every time I walked by there, I would cross the street legitimately because I had friends that worked there. And, you know, I was like, I didn't want to walk by and have somebody be like, oh, hey, where are you coming from? And I got to be like, ugh, this thing. Or have them be like, you should come in. I'm like, I don't want to fucking come in. I only want to go there if I'm able to be there. And I might be insane. A lot of people don't have that same thought, but
no,
I don't want to be there until I'm there. You know,
I definitely see what you're saying.
I agree with you because like there was a time where I was in Montreal doing shows, but it was during the time that JFL was happening, and I had a friend that was doing JFL, and he invited me. He was like, oh, there's an after party. Why did you come over? I'm like, I don't want to be there unless I'm performing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just go to an after party to hang out with other comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the same thing you said, Nathan. Because then people are going to be like, hey, what are you doing in Montreal? And I'm like, oh, I was doing, you know, no matter how good the show is, it's not JFL. So that's just what's good. So I'm like, no, I'd rather be there with like an artist badge instead of just, you know, I'm somebody's plus one. It's embarrassing.
Now, Nathan, can I ask just one more question about the cellar? You didn't come in and let them know that you had done a comedy now?
Are you joking?
Yes, obviously.
Okay, good.
You didn't drop the Comedy Now special and be like, okay, now I work here?
No.
No, you didn't. You got so upset with me for a second. You're like, if you were serious, I'm ending.
Do you know what, though? In all seriousness, when I first got there, like the first couple weeks I was there, so Cellar used to do a late night show. A lot of clubs have a late night thing where they put out like new comedians once the regular shows are done, right? Like the right. Rivoli used to do it years ago, that type of thing. Anyways, when I first got there, they were bringing that back. So I did send in a clip of my Comedy Now, and the guy that was booking it at the time was like, yeah, man, come down. So actually, yeah, okay. So I was in the Cellar one time before that to do a show, but it was the late night show. So it was 2 a.m,
and you were maybe 2:30. Yeah.
You were doing 5 minutes to a crowd if they stayed. And here's exactly what happened. Late night show happens. Host goes up, is doing fine. The next guy goes up and does not do very well. The crowd leaves because they've already seen a full show anyway. There was 2 people left. 2. And I got on to do, you know, whatever it was, 5 minutes or something. And one of those guys went to the bathroom. So
doing I talked person, to one man. Guy.
Yeah. Amazing. I talked to one guy from Australia for 5 minutes. And then I think they canceled the late night like 2 days after that because all the comedians were like, what the fuck are we doing late night here for?
Right.
And so I was never in there again until years later. But the guy that was booking it at the time, he was like, oh, I saw your thing. He was like, that's like a well done thing from, you know, where you're from or whatever. And he's like, oh, clearly you're like a comedian, you know,
yeah,
because some people
yeah.
would send in sets from their garage or whatever the fuck.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So, yes. So no, I did not tell them about my Comedy Now, but obviously. Yes, to some kind of degree.
Yeah, well, you presented
a video
as a showcase tape.
Yeah.
And not be that's like, I've done this thing.
Obviously, I you're should not be going in there going, I need a comedy.
No, for sure, yeah.
What clubs did you get your start at in, like, what were some of the first clubs that started working you when you started working clubs in the city?
Gotham was pretty nice to me right away. But I didn't get like, I might do a fucking spot every goddamn 4 months or something. And it was like a guest spot, but they were very cool to me right away. Like they were always nice. The managers and stuff in there are cool. I mean, right away doing stuff at like,
not even right away. Like, I just mean the first ones for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the first ones I would have started like, I don't know, actually working at making a little bit of money would have been, yeah, Gotham and New York, New York Comedy Club, Caroline's.
Caroline's, yeah.
Yeah, Caroline's was nice to me. Kind of right away as well.
New York Comedy Club's pretty cool to people. I know.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
I know that.
They used to be owned by different people. And when it was owned by those people, it was not as cool. But
okay.
Yeah, once Emilio and those guys took over, yeah, it's been great. The place is awesome.
And you don't do runs with Absolute at all anymore then?
It's not that I don't. I mean, he hasn't hit me up in a while. I haven't messaged him. It's just like, right. It's not just any kind of big thing. It's just sort
yeah,
of
yeah.
It just is what it is.
You guys just haven't linked up in a
yeah.
while. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, it's, yeah. Like, yeah, Absolute's kind of like picking up a little bit slowly and they're doing their shows.
Yeah, because their clubs are open again. I just that run with them.
Oh, how was that? Yeah, you were here last week, right?
That was in Toronto last week. Yeah. No, dude, the shows were great. They were a lot of fun.
That's great.
Yeah, and I did Kingston in Ottawa before that. And then, you know, I really hope another shutdown doesn't hurt those guys because it's a cool club.
Very important to have the clubs around.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So they had glass, right?
Yes,
yeah, they had the plexiglass and stuff. You get used to it within 2 minutes. Like, it's
the fucked up part about it. When I was there, though, you can see your reflection in it, and it's brutal.
Yeah,
it's brutal. Like, you just always have. You can see your posture, your horrible posture
for a minute, though.
No, I know. You get over it. If you're having a good set, you get into it.
Yeah.
It would be horrible to bomb there, though. Just
oh, if you were bombing to your reflection, that would be terrible.
It's insane.
But no.
Yeah.
But you're doing good, and you're having fun, and
you won't even notice.
You adjust like right away. So.
Yeah, I don't want plexiglass.
No, nobody.
I'd honestly rather do a show in the park than behind the plexiglass. It's like, it's not that I wouldn't do it, but I'd rather do a show on a patio than behind plexiglass. I there's just something about it that's like, fuck, man, what the fuck?
You haven't done any plexiglass show yet.
I have not done a plexiglass show, no. And
well,
you've
done car shows, right? You've done.
I have not done the car shows either.
Oh, you haven't done car shows either. So no. You haven't even had people honk or flash their lights at you or anything weird like that.
I've been asked to do the shows, and I said no to the car shows, and I'm not.
What about Zoom? Have you done any Zoom shows?
I did one Zoom show for 4 minutes, and I closed.
They asked him to do 10, and he did 4.
And he did 4, and he's like, good night, everybody.
I closed my laptop and said never again.
Yeah,
and
that's fair.
This is like, and I'm not, you know, I'm not like, I'm, it just is what it is. I'll tell you this.
It's weird.
If stand-up comedy becomes Zoom, I'm not a stand-up comedian anymore. I'll drive a truck.
I agree.
I get that. I did one Zoom show for the beer store. So I had to do 20 minutes.
Like a corporate type thing?
Like a corporate type thing. And I got in trouble for a joke after they said everything goes.
From the beer store?
From the beer store.
What was the joke?
It was like a masturbation about how, like, with COVID, premature ejaculation is going to be through the roof.
Uh-huh.
And the whole joke is, like, my friend's like, can't guys take matters into their own hands? I'm like, yeah, masturbation's okay. It's like Little Caesar's pizza. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you can have it and do it in a moment of weakness, but nobody's on death row like, oh, yeah, last meal, send over a hot and ready.
Sure.
And the beer store was like, no. And I'm like, the joke's mostly about Little Caesars being garbage.
You sell liquid that makes people fucking fight each other.
Yeah, you sell alcohol.
Totally obnoxious.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They threatened not to pay me. I said, hey, you said everything goes. It was like this whole thing. I got my money. Everything was fine. But
probably
never
going to
do one Zoom show.
Never going to do that Zoom show again.
Never again to Zoom.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
They weren't going to pay you after just that? That's crazy.
Oh, this HR lady was like, we couldn't pay. We could. This is enough of a reason for us not to pay you. And then the guy who booked it was like, no, it's not. We have a contract. You're paying him. You know what I mean? So it was like, yeah, I didn't even have to get into that argument with her. It was somebody got into the argument on my behalf, but told me about it after. And I was like, yeah, fuck this. Never again.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I did one, and that was kind of it.
Yeah, I just like Zoom shows. It's just, I can't, it just takes all the value out of
comedy.
And yeah, if you're right. If it ends up being that, probably just not going to do stand-up anymore.
If it's just that.
And I won't even be upset. Like,
because it's not stand-up.
It's not stand-up. It's not anymore.
People go, this is the new stand-up.
It's just a very funny conference. That's it.
It kind of makes you see, I was talking with this with somebody, it kind of makes you realize that you never really, I mean, not that you would anyway necessarily, but it doesn't, that you don't do stand-up for money. You know, because even if you do a Zoom show and somebody's like, I'll give you $100. You're like, okay, cool. But you're getting none of the other stuff from it at all. So then I'd rather not do it and lose the $100.
Sure.
As opposed to doing a free show in front of humans. Like, I'd rather do that than a Zoom show for $100 because you want that other thing. You want the connection with people, you want to be in the same room, you want
that's
to hear
you really
your
want.
Actual
yeah.
laughs.
Absolutely.
Money is like a side thing that's cool, but it's
that's not the main reason why. It's not why you start off doing it.
No, and it's never why you started off doing
it's
it.
It's not why
exactly.
I started off doing it. It's just because I love doing this thing. And it's even hard now to like try even new material because there's no rhythm to it, right? Because like with the process of trying material is you going on stage multiple times a night, every night. But now because that's not even possible, it's like, oh, you do a new joke this week and then you don't get to do it until next week. And it's like, all right, I don't even know what the feedback was of that day.
Yeah. Even actually, Rebecca Reeds and I were talking about your turnover rate and how like impressed we are by it. How hard has that been through all of this to kind of like feel confident pumping out new jokes? Like when you go and do the club and the casino, and you have these ideas, how nervous are you or how much do you commit to new stuff when you're back on the road after all this?
Um, the club and the casino, I was more, because, you know, I was going from doing 8 minutes a couple times a week under a tree to to a stage doing 45. More so, I was really just so happy to do it that I was definitely I was doing new stuff and like a little bit of old stuff, but I was more just like, those shows, I kind of, every time I came off, I went, well, I did 45. I was just judging it on such a different thing, if that makes any sense.
No, like, you were just happy to be able to do it for that long.
Yes, I couldn't believe it, because the first night I did 30, well, I got to 30 minutes, and I was like, I don't know what to say now. I don't know. I'm just screwed. And I just tried to talk to the crowd a little bit to, like, get out of it. But, I mean, it's such a different thing. You know, again, doing 8 minutes in a park to doing 45 in a room. But I also kind of just like, I don't know, once all this sort of stuff happens, you realize how insane, like, the amount of pressure we put on ourselves to do certain things. Like, if I would have been doing that club before any of this happened, it was the first time I was there. So I would have been like, fuck, I got to do super well. And I got to make sure this goes like this. And but dude, like, the first 3 minutes into this, the first show, somebody heckled me, and I was like, this is great. This is so fun. This is great. And I,
hello.
So I definitely did do new stuff. Oh, it was great. Yeah. I really felt, it was so fun. You just go, oh yeah, you can't, even in a pandemic, you cannot,
you can't stop being a douche.
Yeah, you just can't control it.
Yeah, it's just out of your hands. When it's, you get up hands. In front of strangers, it's just out of your hands a little bit. Which is the exciting thing about it sometimes, right?
Well, that's why I always thought that, like, when people were doing, and I guess they still would be doing it, but when they do safe space shows, you kind of go, okay, you can, to some kind of degree, control what comedians will do and are able to say. You cannot.
Human being.
Crowds.
Yeah.
So this whole thing doesn't work in terms of the universe, you know? Like, you can't tell a crowd, hey, this show is this, because they do it every time anyway. Don't heckle people.
They always, okay? Yeah, at every club, like, they do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't control, like, these are strangers that you're trying to get do a very specific thing. It can't go right all the time. It just
and that's the thing. It's like a structured reality that you've built for yourself that isn't actual reality, because you can control safe spaces with your friends or the venue that you like to go to. But once you're out in the wild, there's no such thing as that anymore. And when you're dealing with somebody who doesn't care, who's going to heckle you, then you're like, well, my friends aren't here to help me. So it's just going to be you, buddy. So you got to figure it out. And if you haven't been in those situations, you're fucked.
Yeah. I was doing new stuff in there, and I was putting because I couldn't even really remember some other stuff that I had been doing, but I was putting stuff in, and if it worked, I was like, great, and if it didn't, I was like, well, that's fine, I'll go into the next thing, and I'm doing 45 here. Like, I was really just having a good time when it first started to come back. I still am, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's always fun when you get to do a club again and you're like, oh, people. And that's what I mean. Like, I know you haven't done a plexiglass show yet.
No, I can't. I can't.
I honestly, dude, I think if you got up there, you'd be like, I can still see them. There's still people. You're like, Jason, no.
Jason, I'm telling you, no. I
you hate it.
I really would, because it's just, and again, it's not, I'm not some kind of hero, but there's just a piece of it where you go, okay, this still takes away from, the connection to these people.
It still feels pandemic-y.
And it also just feels like you're at the fucking zoo, or you're watching a museum piece of stand-up, like what stand-up was, you know? It's like you're walking in the ROM and they're like, oh, look, comedy, and some fucking psycho is standing behind glass talking to you.
You're like a silverback gorilla. People are like amazed
by you. Some clubs don't. Because I've done like Levity and Showtime, Levity's in Hamilton, Showtime's in St. Catharines, no plexiglass.
Great.
Absolute's in bigger cities, so it's like they
have plexiglass. Yeah, They can have more people in with the glass, right? That's what the whole thing is. Like if they have that.
No, it's the same number. It's the same number. I think it's just more like because it's in Toronto, and it's in a bit, and it's in a very busy part of town too. Like Yonge Street is like insane. So,
yeah.
I think that's more or less it because it's like Toronto and Ottawa have the highest numbers in Ontario.
Yeah.
And then that's where two of the clubs are, right? So. And then Kingston does it just because what Jason keeps the same rules for all three clubs, I guess.
Yeah.
Honestly, man, I just think like, I think like what Nathan said, do you feel like your attitude towards comedy kind of like was not necessarily changed, but it kind of reminded you of why you started doing comedy? Because that's what I'm kind of like feeling that what you're getting at. Like when you were saying that you don't put as much pressure on yourself anymore as much, like you're back to like genuinely realizing, oh, this is why I'm doing it. Or you're having more fun on stage. Does the pandemic do that to you, you think?
Yeah, because you obviously get way less shows. So when you do get a show, you're appreciative of it, you know? Not that you wouldn't have been before, but
if
you're doing like three shows a night every night for 7 days, some of those you don't even remember, and you're doing them because you've been asked to do them. But when there's nothing going on and somebody goes, hey, do you want to do the show Friday? You go, yes, and thank you. Like that's just
true, yeah.
Great, because you get that whole, again, you get that thing that you wanted from the beginning, which is just to say funny things and hopefully have people laugh and not really think about the other stuff. And I mean, eventually I guess I'll get back to like truly worrying about money because, you know, got to figure it out somehow, or move to Nova Scotia and start kicking lobsters off of a boat. But
right. Yeah, it's not bad. I got good lobster there, so it's okay.
If you could get it. Yeah. That's a tough job to get, but the money thing is the thing, but, yeah, again, I'd rather do a show for free than do a Zoom show for money, which makes me just kind of realize that, yeah. I mean, again, not that I wouldn't have anyway, but you just go, yeah, man, I like being in front of people. I like all of what it is. So, yeah, the whole thing has made me kind of relook at what my sort of thoughts on doing stand-up.
Right. It's going to be... Yeah. A little nerve-wracking for you, right? Because, you know, President Peach is obviously not giving you guys any money. And then...
Who's he not giving money to?
Americans, right?
No, people were getting...
I thought it was one check. Am I wrong?
They did that check, but then they also did have... So if you signed up for unemployment, there was... $600 on top of it for... relief. They did the same thing that here did in terms of just printing money for people.
Okay.
Stimulant
package. The impression I got was like that it was far worse of like everybody gets one $1,200 check and then go fuck your mothers or whatever. But I guess
no, I mean, there was that one check, but then if you signed up for unemployment or whatever, there was an extra, like say you got $400 a week unemployment. There was also like an extra $500 on top of that,
right?
Because of what's been going on, yeah.
So if you're not an idiot and you claimed enough through the year, you're kind of fine, or at least get some assistance.
Yeah. There was definitely some assistance we had.
But
it stopped recently, and I mean Canada did too, right? CERB stopped, or they reshaped it or something.
Stop, but they're reshaping it too, where now it's going to be like, so if there's weeks that you don't get a lot of work, because some places might shut down for a couple weeks till numbers get low and then reopen. So it's this whole thing where it's not CERB anymore.
They're going per week. Like CRB. It's almost like a report that you fill out, and like I've worked these days for that much hours, and that's how much
it's going to be. Yeah.
And then based on that, they're like, okay, this is how much you need on top of it to make sure that you're covered. So, they are doing...
October's busy, but then November's dead. So, it's like, you know what I mean?
It's really kooky right now. Nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, same sort of thing down there. And obviously, like, you know, election and all that kind of stuff. I mean, see what happens with all that type of stuff.
We're all just
trying to figure it out, and Canada's, you know, doing the same, I guess. So Yeah, man. I don't know.
Everything's up in the air, and we'll just see what happens, right? But
yeah.
But obviously, like, it's got to be a bit different there with the clubs that you've done, because is there not a limit?
They haven't done any indoor performances yet.
In New York, but like when you did the casino.
Oh yeah, and the casino had it was half full and
half full.
Had to be spaced out.
Okay. So they are doing protocol like that then too.
Yep.
American clubs are big though, so like half full could still be 200 people depending on the club.
It was like 150, yeah.
Wow.
See, for half, that's awesome. Still like a lot of people. That's great.
Yeah, it was great, and people were spaced out, and you were most people were wearing masks. But again, once you were at, you know, I also don't really understand this rule: wear a mask when you walk to a table, but then take your mask off.
Yeah, no, it's another one of those.
At your table, COVID can get you, but like when you're walking around, that's the problem. You know, when you want to go take a poop, that's when you might get it.
Yeah,
like as long as you're sitting and eating nachos and whatever, you're fine. You should be okay. Yeah, that's also like another thing that I don't really get too.
No, I feel like this is like half-ass protect ourselves. The business needs to protect themselves.
It's really what it is. I think it's like insurance stuff and like liabilities thing. And all that shit. But it's also, I don't know, as a performer, would it be like any different if people were wearing masks? Would that kind of affect our
performances
because you won't be able to see their faces or something like that? You have to watch if their eyes are squinting to make sure if they're laughing or not.
That would be a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be weird too. I mean, I would rather the masks than the plexiglass.
That's
You really bother them
with that.
Did something happen to you with plexiglass as a young man?
Again, maybe I'm being crazy. I just don't want to stand behind glass. It's a reminder to me. It's a reminder of, you know, I should have stopped doing comedy 10 years ago. You're just standing behind a box.
Wouldn't watching people laugh with masks on also be a reminder of like, this is a fucking nightmare. This is brutal.
Yeah, but there's something better about that to me. None of it's a party. None of it's the answer, The plexiglass man really just, God, I don't know. And in a week when every show is plexiglass, I'll be at plexiglasses on Main Street in Tilsonburg.
Yeah.
Screaming behind glass. So, you know.
You probably get bumped there because the Tilsonburg guy's coming in and do a hot 10 minutes.
Competitive scene, Nathan.
I can believe it'd be hey, man, put your name in this bucket. We'll see if we can get you up. I can see that happening.
You're like, this is Tilsonburg.
You're on at 2 a.m. on Tilsonburg. One guy there. He's wearing a mask. You're behind plexiglass. It's a fucking nightmare.
It's like, this is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you do have coming up that hasn't been canceled before you either go home or go out east?
No, I guess I go back to New York on Wednesday morning.
Okay.
I might do a show there, but then the next things I have, I'm going to be in Vancouver and Edmonton at the end of November.
Oh, you're doing Rick Bronson's?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that would be a good couple clients.
Yeah, hopefully, as long as right now I just kind of go, you know, somebody messaged me the other day and I was supposed to do a show a week ago in Toronto and they were like, hey, they actually had to close the venue because a drag performer got COVID, so they're just shutting the whole thing down. They're like, we really apologize. And I go, honestly, absolutely zero shocks me at this point. So.
Sure. Yeah,
I'm kind of like, if those shows do happen in at the end of November, great. But I could also very well see who the hell knows what's going to happen from now till then, and maybe they don't happen. So
yeah,
it is what it is. But right now, it's supposed to.
I'm supposed to be in Edmonton in 2 weeks from now, and I could still get an email saying, "Oh, it's canceled," and I wouldn't be surprised. Like,
absolutely,
it's changing so quickly, right? So
yeah, and you can't get mad about it or anything. You just
I'm not gonna get mad.
It is what it is, you know.
It is what it is.
But you recently did JFL though, right? With the John Doerr.
Yeah, that's what I was here for. Was a TV thing for JFL? Yeah, on Tuesday and Wednesday they did those tapings.
And how did it go?
It was super fun, but it's one of those things, like I was saying earlier, about putting pressure on yourself for, like, every time I've ever done a TV taping the night before, I'm always so stressed. Mm-hmm. And doing this one, I wasn't at all. I was more just excited about it. And I was like, oh man, I hope this, you know, cause you can't even do stand-up. I didn't do stand-up for 2 weeks and then did one quick spot and then a taping, which normally is complete insanity. But with all this going on, you just kind of go, yeah, it is what it is, man. I can't stress out about things I can't
control. You can't control this. Yeah. So you just, like, you work with what you got. If one spot is all you can get, then that's what it is.
Yeah. But the thing was really fun. I mean, they had room spaced out, so there'd be a table, next table empty, and then the next table had people, but they were still spaced out. And there was probably like 50 people, I think they said, 40 or 50 people for the taping. But I mean, it was great. It was so fun.
That's good, man. It was great to do. That's good, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. And you're not very, like, are you, like, very, you know, I mean, like, are you like, very cautious about, like, this COVID stuff with, like, the mask wearing and the distancing? Or do you, you know, just, like, as long as you kind of do it yourself, you're fine? Or do you, like, worry about other people not doing that?
I mean, masks are, I will. Maybe that doesn't even help that much, but it's like something. So yeah, I do that. Yeah.
How? Because this is something I've noticed. After a show at a club, how many people have tried to shake your hand after, even with all this going on, and you're like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, people do that or try to hug or whatever the hell. A lot of people I found come up and they go, hey, and then they go, oh yeah, I'm not wearing a mask. But there definitely are you talking about Kingston specifically?
Well, Kingston is, of course yes, Kingston. Absolutely. Doesn't give a fuck, because Kingston, no. When I went there, they were like, we only have 3 cases. And apparently it was somebody visiting from Toronto. They blamed it on Toronto anyways. I'm like, yeah, they're evil. Whatever small town people want to say about Toronto. So I was like, okay, you only have 3 active cases. So yeah, people there did not seem worried about it. They were like, yeah, let's hug and get a picture with our masks off. And I'm like, I don't know. Because I'm like,
yeah. I'd be in the same boat as you, but they are sort of right as well, you know,
like, sure, because there's like no cases down there. So yeah,
I kind of East Coast, man. My, like, friends of mine, all their stories are just them in bars, no mask, drinking, because there's zero.
Back to normal. Yeah.
They do a good job of protecting themselves. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they shut off.
Good for them.
They were smart. They were super smart about it. When you're out there, if you want to work, do punchlines or Hell's Basement.
I did that. Yeah, I did Hell's Basement before. I actually should message them to see if they're still open. Like, hopefully it is.
Yeah,
hopefully
well, it's a great venue, man.
Supposed to do it. It's great.
In the summer, and then everything shut down. So yeah. Shannon's going to get back to me with a date. Hopefully, yeah, things are still going. And then Punchlines in St. John, too. So.
Yes, I was supposed to do that in April. And then it obviously, you know.
Right, and then everything happened. But if you're going to be out there anyways.
Yeah, I should try to hit them up, mostly, again, just to see if they're still – I think Punchlines is fine. I don't know enough about – like, I did it once, but hopefully the other place can keep going too. Cause
and you did it when it was Chuckles, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I did it then too. I haven't done it – it, like, moved. It's, like, a whole new location, and he owns it outright now or something, I think.
So. Yeah, it's like a full club to themselves instead of the bar. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so I'm excited about doing it. Things are back to normal.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much for being on the podcast with us, man. We really do appreciate it. It means a lot to us. And
I appreciate you guys having me. Seriously, thank you.
Absolutely, man. This comes out not this Tuesday, but the one after. So I know you said you only had dates like at the end of November, but if you wanted to plug them, please do go ahead. Floor is yours.
Oh, like now?
I mean, or whatever you would like to plug. If anything you want to plug, just the floor is yours.
No, I'm kidding. I got, Twitter and Instagram at Nathan McIntosh. I have a podcast called Positive Anger that you can check out. And, Lord willing, I'll be in Vancouver November 19th to 22nd, and then the following week in Edmonton, November 26th to 29th. If everything goes well right now.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yes, but, please do go go watch Nathan and follow him on the social medias. He's a great comic, very funny guy. And that's it for us, guys. Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. We'll check you guys next week. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Go fuck your mothers.
All right. Bye.